From the nautical mile of your heart, it's Dave's Gone By.
There goes the Daverhood.
The guy David Lefkowitz is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, swirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everyone, on this Sunday night, June 14th, 2009, Flag Day, to the 314th episode of Dave's Gone By. Here in the rather special Daverhood tonight, I don't know if it has to do with all of television and radio switching over to HD from analog or anything like that, but the radio station is doing all sorts of weird transmitter work, which I wasn't told until the last minute. So rather than be on the regular air this evening, we're just on the digital internet air here. And that's fine by me. I've been thinking about going more and more towards just digital, because it is so much cheaper and in a lot of ways easier. Not totally there yet, but we'll see as far as future episodes of this show. But I know that tonight's episode, we're calling What We Usually Do, because it's going to be a really old-fashioned episode of Dave's Gone By. We're going to do the kinds of segments we were doing right at the beginning of the show when we started back in October of 2002. We've got the News Gone By, which is satirical stuff in the realm of Jon Stewart and Weekend Update and things like that. We've also got Inside Broadway. That's a segment we do every week where we tell you what's going on the stages of New York. And this is the week right after the Tony Awards. So there's all sorts of news stemming from that. And also I'll be reviewing a new show. It's actually an old play, a new production of it, at the Irish Repertory Theater, of a show called The Rivalry, which tells of the debates between Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas about slavery and states' rights and all that kind of stuff. I'll let you know whether I liked it, and I'll debate whether it's worth your while. And if there's time, I'll also talk about my experience, since this is Flag Day, patriotic kind of a day, my experience working briefly for the federal government as a census taker just a couple of weeks ago. So I got some stuff to tell you about that. Should be a fun episode of Dave's Gone By, which wouldn't be here without the help of our wonderful sponsors, and those include Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. They've been around since the mid-1970s, family-owned, right in Hewlett, Long Island, 1315 Broadway. They're right next to what was the Lohman Shoe Store, and is now going to be, I think, a Max and Gino's. Anyway, Hewlett Minuteman Press, go there for all your copying jobs, your binding, your printing, and, you know, putting your label or your logo on a pen or a keychain, all that kind of stuff. They do it well, they do it reasonably, and they're great people to deal with. And Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off any job, big or small, at Hewlett Minuteman Press. This program is also brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons, your party decorating experts. 516-797-3229. 516-797-3229. Now, the owner and proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons is a fellow named Jeff Goodman. You might know him because he's usually my guest co-host on this radio program, but he's still lucky enough to be funning and sunning in Thailand. I think he's coming back next week, so hopefully we'll be able to have him on then. And but get your phone calls in now, because he's the man to call if you're planning a party, a birthday, a wedding, a christening, a bar mitzvah, all these kinds of things. They look better when you let Fancy Schmancy decorate them with balloons and centerpieces. 797-3229. This program is also brought to you by Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. Everything you want to know about what's going on the stages of New York, Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and even special events and awards in New York. If it's happening theater-wise here, Performing Arts Insider will tell you all about it, including contact information if you want to get in touch with the actors, the producers, the designers, the directors. It's all in there every month. PerformingArtsInsider.com is the place to find out more, but it's an old-fashioned hard copy journal. You get it in the mail. You open it up on the train, on your kitchen table. It's real convenient that way. And Dave's Gone By listeners get a really great discount on it. Go to davesgoneby.org for more information. That's right, davesgoneby.org is the website where you can also hear every episode of this program that we have ever done, except for two, which unfortunately, owing to technical difficulties, kind of like what we've been experiencing recently, two of them did not get recorded. But all the others, that's 311 out of the previous 313, are up there, listenable for free anytime at all. You can download them to an iPod or just stream them right on your computer without having to download anything. Plus, you'll see pictures of the show. You can read about the history of the show. DavesGoneBy.org. Well, I think it's time to start the show, so don't go away. We've got satirical news, we've got Broadway news, and we've got me talking government census, and even, I think, some Loudon Wainwright music, too. Going to be a great show. Stick around in the neighborhood. We'll be right back.
Meow! I'm not an ordinary cat. I'm a copycat. I love to make copies. So my favorite place is Yule at Minuteman Press. For three decades, they've been on Broadway in Hewlett, printing booklets, making business cards, designing wedding invitations, and making millions of copies. Meow! How good is Minuteman? Hey, I used to have one life. Now I've got nine. Yule at Minuteman on Broadway opposite Lohman's. Tell him Toner the Copycat sent you for 10% off.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on compact disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
My radio's on, the news is all bad, but it's good for a laugh.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Sunday night, Flag Day, June 14th, 2009. It's time for the News Gone By, a look at world and local events from an unflagging perspective. Well, the Cold War is heating up with North Korea again. In response to United Nations sanctions against nuclear testing, the country said it would soon weaponize its plutonium. This led former President Bush to suggest we incineratize North Korea. No word from the Obama camp on how to counter this latest bit of Seoul aggression. Hopefully he won't dialogize him to death. And speaking of our foreign buddies, congratulations to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, who won re-election yesterday. Surprise! I mean, was that ever in doubt? The head of a totalitarian state, filled with religious lunatics, sitting on a gazillion gallons of oil and a cache of high-tech weapons, goes up for election. Who's going to win? The other guy? The guy whose lever in the voting booth is hooked up to 800 volts? The guy where a vote for him is a vote for disappearing members of your family? The only surprise of the Iranian election is that 12% of the population voted for Billy Elliot. But seriously, the Tony Awards were last week, and Billy Elliot the Musical took 10 Tonys, including Best Musical and Best Book. Elton John did not win for Best Score, but he was happy to see the Best Actor Award divided up among the three actors playing Billy. You said it would be unfair to choose just one among the adorable adolescent boys. And not fair in the voting either. Speaking of the Tonys, did you see what happened to Bret Michaels, the guy from Rock of Love and the band Poison? I missed it when it happened, but it was all over YouTube the next day. Michaels was performing with a cast of the 80s-style musical Rock of Ages. He finished the song and started walking upstage. That's when a piece of moving scenery came down, clonked him in the head, and knocked him flat. The Tony people say he missed his cue, walked into the scenery, and barely got a scratch. In fact, he was up and making jokes about it moments later. Michaels says he didn't miss any cues. He fractured his nose, and he didn't find the incident amusing at all. This will no doubt wind up in the courts at some point. Certainly, as a singer, it's no surprise that Michaels would be worried about damaging his sinuses. The shocking thing is that as a singer in a 1980s metal band, Michaels still has sinuses. But seriously, folks, here's my favorite story of the week. A 90-year-old woman spent 3 days trapped in her bathtub after becoming too weak to pull herself out. According to the San Jose Mercury News, Shirley Madsen of Walnut Creek, California, forgot to put the phone nearby when she got in the tub. She survived by continually adding warm water to the bath, and she was able to drink by using the hole in the bottom of one of her rubber duckies. See, they do make more than just bath time lots of fun. After 3 days of rub-a-dub near death in the tub, Madsen's daughter realized her mom was AWOL, called an ambulance, and everything worked out okay. Her one regret in leaving the tub was that, even in all that time, she rinsed and lathered but forgot to repeat. On the aviation front, divers are still recovering debris and remains from the Air France disaster over the Atlantic 2 weeks ago. 44 bodies have been collected so far as officials try to figure out why a commercial plane with no mechanical failure, obstruction, or warning suddenly fell off the radar and out of the sky. It really is puzzling. How can something so ubiquitous vanish without a trace? Or, as I like to call it, the David Schwimmer effect. Speaking of celebrities and mystery deaths, authorities are still trying to figure out how David Carradine, the actor in Kung Fu and Kill Bill, died last week. He was found hanging in a Bangkok hotel room. First reports said it was suicide. Then they said it was suspicious. Now they say it might be sexual but accidental. Now, I'm not casting aspersions on the Thailand police, but really, this is a pretty easy case to solve, and it's simple to tell which one of the three possibilities occurred. If the rope was around his neck, it's a suicide. If the rope was around his neck and his wrists, it's homicide. If the rope was around his neck, his wrists, and his balls, it's step aside. No, but it's rather ironic that, aside from the martial arts stuff, Carradine's most famous role was the lead in the biopic Bound for Glory. Apparently, he was working on the sequel, Bound and Gagged, for Whoopi.
It's wonderful to be alive, to be a bee in this beehive. It's tough as nails, it's smooth as silk, it's milk and honey without milk. I work with flowers, it's my work. From this there's no way that I can shirk. No, 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 there is no complex philosophy. It's just because I'm a bee.
Say, did you hear about this story in Manhattan 3 weeks ago? I first heard it yesterday, and it's totally creeping me out because I'm phobic about this. The GameStop store in Union Square became a target not for yuppie kids with Xbox addictions, but for a swarm of bees. Workers were trapped inside the store as thousands of bees were swarming outside. The place was shut down while experts were called in to wrangle the bees into captivity by using the scent of the queen to lure them away. Sounds unusual, but it wouldn't be the first time authorities closed a store because of a sting operation. Yes, 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 yes. You all know that wonderful sound. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, long-time listeners to Dave's Gone By know that is the sound of the comedy bell. The bell that signals the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. Whenever we do the News Gone By, we make a play on words so bad, we leave everyone buzzing and feeling waspish, but we never apologize. And that's because the comedy bell reminds us that Dave's Gone By is the place to advertise your product, event, or service. Yes, we're still in a recession. Yes, everybody's spending a little less money on a little less stuff. But that's why your travel agency, your restaurant, your furniture store, God knows, your car dealership, that's why you've got to promote the hell out of what you do. Well, customers won't come if they don't know you exist. Answer that existential question for them. Tell them you exist by advertising on Dave's Gone By. We have 30 and 60 second spots available at rates that fit easily within your budget, I promise. And for a little extra, we promote you on the Dave's Gone By website. We talk you up at the beginning and end of each program, as well as the actual ad itself. We make a real effort to brand your business with ours. Even during these times when, you know, there's trouble with the radio station signal, and we're just doing this on the internet. We may go internet only pretty soon, just because it's cheaper, it's easier, and that's what everybody's doing. But still, people listen. People listen more to the archives than they do when we're on the actual air. And we keep the ads and the mention of what you do on the archives, too. So we use three great keys to successful advertising: repetition, humor, and repetition. So call us this week at 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Write that down, because once you hear the quotes, you're going to want to do this. 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com for all the rates and information. davesgoneby@aol.com. Make your business a hive of activity and bring in that honey. You know that sound well. Hanging it with my cheat sheet here. You know the sound well, the sound of success from the comedy bell. Don't be good, be ponderful. Returning to the News Gone By, in entertainment news this week, television across the nation finally made the switch to high-definition digital broadcasting, as did radio, apparently. Well, this left poor people with old-fashioned rabbit ears on their TVs wondering how to get a picture. And it left the rest of us wondering just how many stubble marks God put on Al Roker's face. Speaking of TV, Sarah Palin's back in the news, raising a stink after her visit to New York because David Letterman made jokes about her. In particular, she took offense when Letterman said that during their visit to Yankee Stadium, A-Rod took the opportunity during the seventh inning stretch to impregnate her daughter. Now, aside from the fact that it's just plain pretty funny, which should be a get-out-of-jail-free card for anything you say in a free society, aside from the joke being just a joke and pretty funny, it was sort of taken the wrong way by Palin and her conservative horde. They took it to be about her 14-year-old Willow, and not her 19-year-old. You know, the one who got pregnant out of wedlock when she was 17. Gosh, which daughter do you think the joke was about? And let us be clear. Letterman went on the air to clarify whom the joke was about. And he said, and I quote, "I recognize that these are ugly. I would never, never make jokes about raping or having sex of any description with a 14-year-old girl." A 15-year-old girl, however. No, no, no. He never said that. I said that. And once again, a joke is a joke is a joke. So even if it is about Palin's 14-year-old daughter, Willow, even if it does involve her and midgets, dildos, flavored lubricant, and a truckload of triple-jointed Guatemalan immigrants, comedy's comedy. And young Willow should be secure within herself about her own sexuality. I'm sure she won't lose her virginity until she's at least 15 and a half. And if she gets pregnant when she's 16 by some half-wit football player, well, obviously, the fault is not with her judgment or his hormones and poor planning. Obviously, the fault is with me and David Letterman for creating a society that talks openly about sex and makes jokes about it, which we know leads directly to moral turpitude and teen pregnancy. Still, I do draw the line at making sex jokes about Palin's Down syndrome kid. He's still at an age where we have to stick with the helmet, diaper, and window-licking jokes. Or, as Baby Trig would put it, yay, poop, yay! Ironic that they would name him Trig, since that's a math function he'll never come close to doing. It's like naming a Jewish housewife Chef. In animal news, get well soon to Wally the Rottweiler in Boxborough, Massachusetts. The 8-month-old puppy is expected to recover fully from surgery, where doctors removed 8 golf balls from his stomach. The surgeon said he hadn't seen that many balls gobbled up at one time since Paris Hilton's last orgy. Oh, sure, groan if you want, but I could have made that one about Willow Palin, so be nice. Some nice tourism news. On the 4th of July, the National Park Service will reopen the Statue of Liberty's crown to visitors. The spot has been off-limits since September 11th, and for safety's sake, only 10 people at a time can go all the way up to the top of Lady Liberty. The first 3 days are already sold out, which is fascinating because this is the first time in history men have shown any interest in what really goes on inside a woman's head. In not-so-nice tourism news, Six Flags will declare bankruptcy this week. The theme park chain is filing for Chapter 11 to help shed $1.8 billion in debt. Company spokesmen say the financial move will not affect operations at any of its locations, including our local Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey. Everything will be business as usual. Well, except for a name change. Six Flags will now be known as Two Flags, a handkerchief, and a baby wipe. In crime news, well, New Hampshire certainly takes its state motto, live free or die, very seriously, because they've let Paul Baldwin live free for the past 25 years. The 49-year-old Portsmouth resident was arrested last week for the 153rd time. Mr. Baldwin has a little alcohol problem, which he claims is the reason he recently punched a guy in the face. Also, perhaps, the reason that since 1984, Baldwin has 152 other arrests, 8 trespass orders, 75 citations, and 24 identity aliases. I would be very careful if I were him, however. He's getting close to New Hampshire's very strict 158 strikes and you're out rule. And that's the news gone by for Sunday, June 14th, 2009. Please send your comments, opinions, and Air France seat cushions to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. We reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request. If you'd rather send an email, my gosh, I'll read that too. davesgoneby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, like my name, davesgoneby@aol.com. And even if you don't want your letter on the air, send us your screen name to get on the weekly Dave mail list. Once a week, we send out a cool, moderately amusing email about the next show, complete with pictures and quotes. It's very cool, and it's free. You just have to get on the mailing list. davesgoneby@aol.com. We love getting your emails, postcards, packages. Send us anything, but please, no rubber duckies. The bill's too high. Back after this.
And that was news. Yes, that was news. That was very, very, very special news.
Did you know that I, Dave, am not just a fantastic radio personality, I'm also a playwright, and my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor I bring to Dave's Gone By every week. Funny, sad, true. Makes a great gift, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com.
In
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TogleTheater.com.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for Inside Broadway on this week after the Tony Awards. Generally acknowledged to be one of the best award ceremonies in the past few years, one of the liveliest and best-looking and most colorful. So here's the Tony wrap-up here on June 14th. The Tonys were last Sunday night. And biggest stories include, well, the winner of 10 Tonys, not quite the producer's territory, but not bad, was the musical Billy Elliot, long thought to be the favorite all year long, really, of all the musicals out there. It won Best Musical, Best Choreography, Best Book, and also the three lead actors, as we mentioned in the news gone by. Three young kids playing Billy, not all in the same show, but each in different nights, because I guess they all have to go to school. Well, they all each won one Broadway Tony Award. Not sure if I put that correctly, but they all divided it up among them, and people were pretty happy about that.
Hit it, Mr. Braithwaite.
We weren't born to stand still, and a question of will, gotta move, it's a fact. You were born to react, you were made to behave, like you will in the grave. When the music is played, well, your soul will be swayed, and your feet, they will move, and it's only to prove that it wasn't by chance.
Other big winners on the Tonys this year included the composers of Next to Normal. That was about the only surprise of the night, because people thought it would be a juggernaut for Billy Elliot, which it kind of was. But Elton John did not win for the songs. The composition, the music stuff, went to Next to Normal, which is this very much smaller, darker musical about a woman having a nervous breakdown, and the woman who plays that woman, Alice Ripley, won for Best Actress in a Musical, definitely deservedly, and other winners included Angela Lansbury for appearing in Blithe Spirit, and just because she's Angela Lansbury and she's in her 80s and she does a cute little dance on stage, who's going to beat that? And also Roger Robinson, who collected a Tony for Joe Turner's Come and Gone, which definitely got a last-minute PR boost a week and a half ago when the Obamas went to see it, although he certainly also deserved an award, and he did really, really well in the piece. The Norman Conquests, yay, that was my happiest thing of the night. Norman Conquests won for Best Play Revival, Hair won for Best Musical Revival, and although I was kind of rooting for Reasons to Be Pretty to win the Best New Play Tony, God of Carnage, the favorite, did win. So congratulations to Yasmina Reza. Her other play, Art, also won a Tony a few years ago. And just have to say yay to the Tony people for giving Shirley Hers a special kind of a lifetime achievement Tony Award for dedication to the theater. Shirley is a press agent. She's one of those folks who gets the press, or tries to get the press, to go to the shows. She releases the information about what the shows are and what's happening with them, and, you know, gets all the stars to be on the radio and the TV. And I deal with a lot of press agents, and I have for over 20 years now. And Shirley was always not just one of the best, but really one of the nicest. And also her office was one of the first to recognize me as a writer and a theater critic. I mean, I was nobody. I was coming out of college. I was writing for a little Long Island newspaper and didn't really know that much about reviewing, even though I'd been taught kind of to write about theater in college, although it was more about writing plays, and certainly didn't know about the business of theater or how to structure a review, really, or also just how to go about going to the theater, arranging for seats and meeting deadlines, stuff like that. Well, some of the press agents were not very nice. Some of them were perfectly okay, but it was Shirley and Sam Rudy and Miller Wright and the people in her office at that point who really took me seriously very early on, said, oh yeah, you know, what you do is we arrange these tickets and blah, blah, blah. So hooray, hooray, and well-deserved Tony for Shirley Hers. Anyway, amazingly enough, here you've got this Tony show. It got better ratings, by the way, than several in many years. CBS says the ratings were up nearly 20% since last year, and they got the best ratings since 2006,
which is pretty nice. I mean, ratings have just been tanking year after year after year. So probably, hopefully, Billy Elliot gave them a boost. And I guess Neil Patrick Harris was getting pretty popular from doing all these sit-ins on talk shows. And Neil Patrick Harris was also one of the best things about this year's Tonys. Everybody's saying that. He was funny, he was snarky but not nasty, he was cool, he was collected. He even had that amazing, mind-blowing, fun comedy song at the very tail end. Did you all see that? Even those of you who didn't watch the Tonys, maybe you were putting on the Channel 2 at 11 o'clock to see the news, and the Tonys run until 11:04. CBS gives them 4 extra minutes, you know. So they use that to give Neil Patrick Harris a song that made fun of the awards ceremony and the winners. And it was just, like, amazingly, almost shocking that they were able to put this together. Now, turned out, if you look at YouTube, you realize that they wrote the song, they practiced it, and they did it before the Tony Awards. So they kind of gave away, I guess, to the audience in-house who some of the winners were going to be. But you know, I kind of thought, oh my God, they put it together and wrote it while the ceremony was going on, and then they did this big final number at the end. But okay, they kind of had it ready. Even so, it was a surprise, it was hilarious, and Neil Patrick Harris really brought it off. So, yeah, good stuff on this year's Tonys. But here we are, we're talking about Billy Elliot, the good hosting job, all these good plays that won, and these people that won, but what is everybody talking about the Tony Awards? What's the big story that we mentioned on the news gone by? Oh yeah, Bret Michaels. Bret Michaels, he was ending his song Nothing But a Good Time, and he had a bit of a bad time on it. He, as we said, he was walking back. Maybe it was because he took the time to wave at the crowd. He finished the song, and you know, instead of just going straight back, he's like, I'm going to wave to everybody, and boom, walked right into scenery. And I didn't even notice it when it was being broadcast on TV and when I watched the tape replay. Because what happened was CBS was already doing a fade and a transition into the next camera with Stockard Channing doing a song from Pal Joey, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, all of which I guess Bret Michaels was at that moment. So you kind of saw Bret Michaels going forward. You almost thought you saw something weird happen, but by then the camera was already on Stockard Channing. You had to go on YouTube to actually see the close-ups and the cool thing of him just going bam into the scenery. And as I mentioned, this is definitely going to go to the courts now, because the Michaels camp is all ticked off because the Tonys tried to say, oh, it was nothing, and he was fine, and he was making jokes after it, and he got up and sang. And then Michaels is putting photographs on his own blog site and website of him with a fractured nose and, like, blood in his eyes, and saying, no, I got hurt, this is bad, you know. And who knows, he does not have the rock of love for the Tony people. But, yeah, I have to say, it was all in all a very good Tony show. The only real controversy, and they have this year after year in different permutations. Now, years ago, the first hour of the Tony Awards was broadcast on public television. It wasn't that long ago. It would start at something like 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. They would have an hour for the Tonys, and it would be dedicated to all the quote-unquote smaller awards. Sets, costumes, lighting, orchestration. The stuff that CBS was worried mom-and-pop middle of the country wouldn't be all that interested in hearing about. No matter that the Oscars takes 4.5 hours and they do every little technical award on the air. No, for the Tonys, I guess because it's seen as a very New York-y kind of thing, with some justification, they decided, okay, you know, we'll have these televised, but public television can do it. And public television did a terrific job of it. They used to make these little documentaries about how the costume designers did their work, and they would interview the directors and the actors and stuff. It was neat. It was a really good hour of television. And then you would get to the actual award ceremony, you'd flip over to CBS and see, you know, the glitzy part, and then the big famous more of those awards. Well, now, here CBS is taking the whole 3 hours, as they have in the past few years, and everybody's very happy that the Tonys are getting national exposure, and that despite, over the years, the decline in the ratings after, you know, the Rosie O'Donnell seasons, you know, and CBS is still sticking with the Tonys because it's a jewel in the crown and it's a Tiffany network and stuff like that. But here they are, this year especially, saying, well, even though we have 3 hours and 4 minutes, it's still not enough time to do the Little Awards. And so they pushed the Little Awards totally off the air. I mean, I guess they were on the internet at the Tony Awards website. But if you were tuning in to your TV anywhere, whatever, you were not going to see some fairly major awards, including, I think, Best Revival of a Play was not given on the... I think that's... I may be misremembering that, but they had a pretty major award that they didn't even bother to show in the regular broadcast, and I think that's kind of ridiculous. And that, in fact, I just mentioned also the that special award for that press agent, Shirley Hirsch, that was not shown on the air. So, I don't know. I mean, kudos to CBS for really bumping up the entertainment value and doing a good job this year, really good job. But also, I mean, come on, it's an award ceremony. It's not just a commercial for Broadway. There's got to be more of a balance. Anyway, speaking of Tonys and stuff and some of the negative stuff, well, this happens every year after the Tony Awards. Some shows get a nice bump at the box office because they win, or they do a big musical number on TV and everybody sees that and people go, oh, let's go see that, or we're coming to New York in 2 weeks, let's get tickets. And then other shows that were counting on winning a Tony or looking really good on the air to beef up the box office because they're failing, and it's sort of their last gasp. It's like, oh, okay, maybe we'll win this award, and then we can advertise that and promote that. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, well, the shows are pretty much out of luck. So, some sad news for two fairly big shows this year. First of all, Guys and Dolls closed today. You know, they were hanging on by their fingernails. They did not get particularly good reviews, especially since all of the critics, myself included, were comparing it, rightly or wrongly, to the wonderful Guys and Dolls that was done 15 years ago on Broadway with Nathan Lane and Faith Prince. Even if you weren't comparing the two, this Guys and Dolls had a few things lacking from it, including just a lot of problems with tone, and they weren't getting the crowds. So they thought, oh, well, maybe we'll get a Best Revival thing or an actor thing. Didn't happen, so Guys and Dolls closed today, and really much sadder, the show that could have, and in my opinion should have, won for Best New Play of the Season, Reasons to be Pretty, the Neil LaBute comedy drama, well, that, I mean, they were getting no audiences at all, and they desperately needed a Tony win to have any chance at running. But God of Carnage took the award, so Reasons to be Pretty found all too many reasons to close, and it did this afternoon. And that, you know, I'm harping on this a little bit, but it hurts me the worst because I saw Reasons to be Pretty off-Broadway about a year and a half ago. And I thought, oh, it's okay, it's a pretty good play, a little longish, but definitely worth seeing. Then I saw it again on Broadway when it opened a couple of months ago, and I was very, very impressed in the fact that LaBute, the author, improved it. He made it better. You know, there was all this talk in the dailies and the newspapers saying, oh, the show's in trouble, and they don't know whether to cut the intermission or have an intermission or what they're doing. It wasn't that at all. He was tinkering to make it better, and what he did, quite simply, although, as any playwright will tell you, it's not a simple thing at all, he cut the monologues. Each character, it's a 3 or 4 character play, each character had about a 5-minute monologue where they talked to the audience, said something about themselves, about the relationships they were in. They were amusing, but they didn't push the play forward. And you really, it's part of the first things you learn in playwriting, you don't have a monologue, and you don't talk to the audience, certainly, you don't narrate, unless you really, really need to. If you can fit the information into the play in another way, and make it more active, rather than just narrative, well, that's a much better play. And gosh darn, that's what Neil LaBute did with Reasons to be Pretty. He chopped out the monologues, he put the important information that was in them into the characters, he made the play shorter, so instead of running 220, it ran about 205, and he made the play better. And I was so happy to see that, and so impressed with it, that I'm doubly sad that not only did Reasons to be Pretty win a Tony Award, it closed today. Oh well, oh well. Now that the Tony Awards are over, and the Broadway season ended already like 3-4 weeks ago. We're on to the new Broadway season, and we've learned that there's going to be another Broadway show. It's really a dance show that's coming to the Longacre Theater July 25th through October 18th. It's called Burn the Floor, and it's all these mixes of types of dance. It's Latin dance, Harlem dance, jive, salsa, ballroom, Viennese waltz, Lindy, rumba, Charleston. It's this, one of these big old touring shows like Stomp and Thump and Swagger and, you know, those kinds of things mixed with tango, Argentino sort of stuff. Coming from Australia, actually. It's not a Latin or South American-based thing, but it's called Burn the Floor, running from July through October at the Longacre. And speaking of shows that I think you should see, well, I do have to put in a plug for Stage Buddy Showbiz Talk. That is the show that I MC live every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Players Theater on McDougal Street in Greenwich Village. It's a really cool thing. It's a panel where I talk to people who are in the entertainment industry. Casting directors, theatrical directors, producers, cabaret singers, Broadway actors and directors. And we just sit them down, and in a very casual but informational way, I talk to them and I ask them how they do what they do, how they got started, and how they keep going. And also suggestions for people in the audience, like actors, who want to get into the business, or maybe they're already in the business but want to do more and get better and get more noticed. So check out Stage Buddy Showbiz Talk. It's Tuesday nights, 7 o'clock at the Players Theater, 115 McDougal Street. That's between Bleecker and West 3rd. All you got to do is really go to the West 4th Street train station, walk straight east, one block down West 3rd, and there you are on McDougal. Check it out on this Tuesday night, June 16th. Actress Cheryl Freeman will be there. She was in Tommy and the Civil War. We have producer Seth Greenleaf from G4 Productions. We've got casting director Duncan Stewart, who casts for the Broadway show Chicago, and Tom Stewart, who is the voice and sometimes the face of Channel 13. He does most of their audio work. So check it out this Tuesday, 7 o'clock at the Players Theater. Go to stagebuddy.com for more information. And actually, if you click on the blue advertisement for Tuesday nights, you can see the last 5 episodes that we've done. They're all taped for television. So they're about 40 minutes long, and I think you'll enjoy them. And also, we try and have something musical in each episode. Usually one of our guests is a performer, and they'll sit down at the piano or sing to track. So definitely check it out. Check it out at stagebuddy.com. Well, we've got a review to do on Inside Broadway, and we will do that right after this message from Performing Arts Insider.
Broadway theater has never been grander or more expensive. So, like any big purchase, you gotta do homework. You want to pick the best show or the most family-appropriate, the best reviewed, or with the biggest stars or most interesting design. Everyone has different criteria. Performing Arts Insider answers them all. For decades, the Bible of Broadway that professionals check for every show on every New York stage. Visit PerformingArtsInsider.com and see DavesGoneBy.org for a 30% subscriber discount. Now go, do your homework.
Welcome back to Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By. It's review time as I head down to one of my favorite off-Broadway places, the Irish Repertory Theater on West 22nd Street. The quality of work over the years has, for the most part, just gone up and up and up, so I'm pretty happy to see almost anything that they've got on there, but not this particular time. They're doing a revival of a play called The Rivalry, which was written by Norman Corwin back in 1959, and it's a play about two really larger-than-life personalities during larger-than-life times. It was when Abe Lincoln was still a lawyer and running for office, and Stephen A. Douglas had the job that Lincoln wanted. So this was about the speeches that they made with Lincoln on one side of the slavery issue, obviously, and Douglas on the other side, with, as we tend to know from our history, it wasn't so cut and dried. It was really more about states' rights than just the morality of slavery and all that. So what Corwin did in the play was take big chunks of the speeches that they actually gave and weave them into a story, also a bit about the men when they're off stage. So they have, you know, little tete-a-tetes with each other and are very amusing and friendly together. And we also see them, you know, with their wives and the women in their lives. But mostly it's about them giving the speeches, the famous speeches that they gave, trying to put their points across with Douglas versus Lincoln, the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates. Well, sounds like it should make for pretty good drama, and it might be, except it's just the way that it is put forward in this particular production, directed by Joe Dowling. You have to understand, the Irish Repertory Theatre is not a large place. I didn't count, but I think it seats under 150 people. It is not a Broadway theater. It is not mic'd. I don't think it doesn't need to be. Maybe for musicals they do it. But they have, especially in the case of the actor playing Abraham Lincoln, let me see if I can find his name in the Irish Repertory stage bill that they give up. He looks like Lincoln. He has a charming, folksy manner about him. And he could be very good. But he's playing as if he is in a theater, a guy named Christian Kaufman is the actor's name. You would figure he was in an 800-seat hall because he is bellowing constantly so loud. I actually had to have my fingers to my ears every time he would get up to speak and say something, and not just even during the speeches. Sometimes when he was just talking to Douglas off stage, you know, off the stage of where they were speechifying back in the 1800s, he would still be so loud and so vociferous that you cringe, and you'd be like, hey, you can get the point across that you're talking to all these people and you're giving this big booming speech without carrying your voice so loud that it's shaking the rafters of this little theater. Stephen A. Douglas does it better. I mean, you don't mind when he's declaiming. Although, even in the scenes when they're not talking out directly to the audience, there's a sense of everybody kind of grandstanding and just playing to the bleachers rather than to each other. They're kind of, it isn't really felt acting. It feels like they're really just playing roles instead of inhabiting them. So I have to admit, between not being terribly taken by the play, the speeches were interesting but not terribly dramatic, and not liking sitting there in a theater being hollered at, I admit I left at intermission. Well, you know, so sorry about that, but I really didn't want to subject myself to the second hour of the rivalry. Sorry to be in a rivalry on the other side of Irish Rep this time, because they've done so many other wonderful things in the past. But you can't win them all, and I can't recommend the rivalry on Inside Broadway.
We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Dave's Gone By wants you to advertise on the show. Reach our loyal audience with your message at prices you can afford even in this economy. Call 516-295-1511, 295-1511, or visit davesgoneby.org for info. You'll want us just as much as we want you.
Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this June 14th, this Patriotic Flag Day, and kind of appropriate for this day, a little bit of a patriotic, semi-patriotic U.S. government story here, because old Dave wanted to make a little bit of extra money, or some money, any money, a couple of weeks ago, and I had registered and taken the test to do the U.S. Census, to be a census taker. Actually, and they promised, about 2 months worth of employment, of going around in the neighborhoods, going door to door, which is what we still do in this day and age, door to door, with, taking notes and saying who's in the house and stuff like that for the American government census, because every 10 years, that's what we do. That's how we get the information about who lives where and how neighborhoods are districted and how the tax brackets are done. I don't even understand how or why it's done. I just know that in 2000, 1990, 2010, they got the census coming up. So They have a call out for all these people to come. You take a training seminar, and then you go out there and you do your census work. So I figured, why not? Why not make a little money for 6 to 8 weeks? The pay was not bad at all. No benefits or anything like that. And so, you show up for training, and the first thing you notice, they give you stuff. Like, the trainers were maybe, I don't know, 1 week more experienced than the rest of us were. It's not like we were sitting there with people who had done this, for the past 30 years, every 10 years, and knew what they were doing. I mean, they had kids up there whom you could tell they skimmed through the big book once or twice and had maybe done what we were doing once, and now they were expected to be the teachers and convey their wisdom to us of how it's done. So already a little bit of a typical American government way of working here. It's kind of like, it made me think of those people, and I've felt like this now and again, who think that they can teach a class because they've taken the same class the day before. You think you just parrot what the teacher told you, and you're as smart as the teacher, and you can teach that class. You just repeat it because you think you know it. But it doesn't quite work like that. But hey, look, we were on the clock, we were being paid, and because it took them so long to teach us what was obvious and what they were sort of just learning themselves, we not only were there for a full 40 hours that first week of training, we got overtime. We were there until 5:30, 6:30 at night because they were playing catch-up. And hey, you get, thanks to the U.S. government, you get time and a half overtime. Very nice. Thank you, Uncle Sam. But there were other things that you don't necessarily want to thank Uncle Sam about. First of all, training is cool. You get a cross-section of people from where I was. I mean, you got, younger and older and Orthodox Jews and people from all different backgrounds. And invariably, when you have a group like this of such disparate people, almost everybody's cool, but there's one or two idiots. And I hate to use that word, but, and it's cool. We were all idiots. We all didn't know what we were doing until we were taught. And we're all a little confused about things, but there's always one or two people who really don't know anything about anything ever in the world. It's amazing they can eat a bowl of soup without, spilling soup all over themselves or turning the bowl upside down with the soup in it to see how the bowl works. Well, we had an old yenta like that with questions about everything, and also one African-American lady who, I swear to God, you would tell her something and then she would ask you 5 seconds later what you just told her. So that's why, among other things, almost the half of the first day was just about roll call, taking attendance, and distributing papers and a box of stuff that involved payroll and things. But by the time we got to the real training, they were 2 hours behind schedule, and they had to start doing the overtime. Now, the cool thing about this particular census this year, the way we were doing it for the first time, I mean, in the old days, you would go house to house. You would walk up, you have these papers, I guess a pen, and you fill in a little grid. You write down the name, you'd say, I was there, and, the main thing that we were doing, and I had to clarify this and tell this to everybody who asked, was that this wasn't the real big census that we're doing next year. This wasn't about how many people are living in your house and what are their names and how many of them are illegal aliens and stuff. No. This was only about the houses themselves. It was a way to figure out where the census should send out and mail out the real long census forms that people will eventually fill out. This was just about asking a single question. Is your house a single-family dwelling, or is it a multi-use dwelling? Which really means, does it have just one main entrance, or does it have a separate entrance where another person could go in separately and dwell and live? It could be a vacant house. It could be a house for sale that's been abandoned 6 months ago or was foreclosed. It's still about the structure itself. So that was the one question we were trying to figure out, either from looking at the house or if someone was there, someone was home, you have to go and ask. That was the real pain in the ass about the whole thing. You couldn't just go to the house, look at the house, and go, oh, okay, there's one doorbell, it's a single-family residence. No. You have to go up to the front door, and around the neighborhoods that I was going, in the five towns, there were places in very, very nice neighborhoods, but every bloody house seemed to be up 18 flights of steps. Maybe it's because of a floodplain, I don't know. But everybody had their front doors where you had to climb, like, the Philadelphia post office staircase just to ring their bloody doorbell. And you have to do it. That's part of the job. If you don't do it, you get, you know, reprimanded, and they can take your job away. So you get up, you go, and you have to ring the bell or knock. Now, the interesting thing was, this is kind of cool, this is sort of the way that I found out about it, or how to get around certain things, is in training, they make it very clear. You can't just look at the house, you can't just stand away from the house, you have to go up on the porch at the front door, and you have to knock to see if someone's home. Now, if no one's home, no big deal. You can still collect the information from what you've got, from what you see, and then go away. It's not like you have to come back. Not like you have to call them. You just have to make the effort to see if they're home. And if they are home, you've got to ask them the question of whether it's a single or multifamily dwelling. And that's it. And if they're interested, you hand them a confidentiality agreement in English and Spanish that you tear off a little sheet. No big deal. So you always hope that no one's going to be home. Because you don't want to deal. Because the whole point also is they want you to make time. They expect you to do, believe it or not, 25 houses within an hour, or residences. 25 within an hour. That's, you know, almost roughly one a minute. One every 2 minutes. Which, if you think about it, with walking and going up and down, seems like insane. But it does kind of work out okay. You do kind of get moving and motoring. Because a lot of times people aren't home. So you knock, no one's there, you leave, you go to the next house. The interesting thing is, and they made this clear in the training, was that they said, knock on the door. Gotta knock on the door. But they didn't say you had to ring the doorbell. And there was no mention in the booklet about doorbells or any other, you know, ways of letting people know you were there. So if the place had a doorbell, which is the way most people these days hear people at the door, well, I wasn't ringing no doorbell. I was knocking on the door. You know, I'm not going to make any extra effort to be noticed and heard. And in fact, the other thing, and this is a trick that I'll give to anybody doing the census next year, is they say, yes, you must knock on the door, but they don't tell you how loud. So let's just say I was like a character out of a Bob and Ray sketch, the softest knocker in America. Not to be confused with the softest knockers in America, which is absolutely a competition I would want to judge. But, I mean, literally, I would go up to the front door, and I'd be like, I'm going to tap on the microphone, like, hello? And if nobody came to the door, well, not my fault, I knocked. And boom, 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 there I was, back on my bike. Now, the interesting thing is, my luck, all our luck, the first week of doing the census thing, every day it rained. Because sometimes huge downpours, just like this piddling drizzle, which make it extra annoying because, as I was going to mention, this was the first year that instead of going out with these pads and pens and pencils and these forms to fill out, we were holding this thing called an HHC, a handheld census something or other, which kind of functions like a BlackBerry. You have a little joystick thing, and you tap into it. And not only do you do everything digitally and electronically and tap your answers in, but it's got its own GPS system. So you're not writing down an address. It's finding where you are, which is really kind of cool. You know, and not only that, me being me, I'm not the most geographically inclined person. And I get lost pretty damn easily. Well, the thing has a GPS system, so wherever I was, if I had to get to another address, I had to follow the thing on the GPS system. I didn't need a map or anything like that. Although, I did waste one pretty ridiculous hour going around and around and being absolutely nowhere. Every time I tried to get to a certain address, there was something in my way. Either a street ended, or there was like a little bay, or some kind of bridge that I couldn't get across. And each time I was like, well, I should be able to just get here from here. And then I realized that what I was looking for, the place where you are is in red. It's like a red flashing dot. And then the area that you're canvassing is a light blue. So you want to go from the red dot to the light blue to the places where the houses are that you have to canvas. So I keep trying to get to this blue space, and I keep, you know, for an hour bicycling around, trying to get around it, trying to go to streets and get to it, and then, schmuck that I was, about 50 minutes in, I realized that the blue space I was going towards was actually water, and that I was mistaking the census canvassing area for a lake. So, you know, I admit, I made fun of the people going to the census training and doing this as idiots. Idiot number one, right here. Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the thing about doing the census taking in this particular case is you get really that cross-section, and typical as it is, it's exactly what you would think you would get if you spent a day, if you spent several hours of a day going from house to house to house, asking people one question and saying you're from the government and doing a census. Some people are really friendly and want to help out and want to tell you about themselves and their next-door neighbor and where to go and what to do. Some people don't want to hear from you at all. Some people don't answer the door. One really, really cranky old man, he was like heading out to his car. And I said, you know, I have to ask you this question. Because the thing is, as a government official, you're actually sworn in if you're working for the census. So you're really an official of the U.S. government. And it is your duty, if you see the owner or someone who lives in the place, to ask the single question about whether it's a multifamily house or not. And it is their responsibility, the owner, to answer your question to the best of their ability. You know, you're a government agent. They should really have to answer. But, of course, nobody really stresses that or pushes that. So, you know, I go to this old guy, and he's incredibly miserable, and he's like, look, I'm going to the doctor. I'm sick. And I was like, okay, yeah, fine. But I just have to ask you this one question. And he's like, leave me alone. I'm sick. I'm going to the doctor. And you know, me being me, I couldn't leave well enough. I was like, sir, it's one question. I know you feel rotten, but you know, it'll take you 10 seconds, can't? And he was in the car, and it's like, leave me alone. You know. Really, I mean, Grandpa Simpson times 10. And there were other people, like, you know, so wary. And I can understand. Here's a strange guy riding around on his bicycle. He's got, like, this bag over his shoulder. And you do have to carry an ID on your person and even wear it around your neck. And even then, people are wary, and especially women who are home. Their husbands aren't home. Maybe the maids are home and the women aren't. So they don't, you know, they're wary. But, you know, there were times I could ask them a question through the screen, and they wouldn't answer. I remember talking to one woman in, like, Hewlett Bay Park, I think it was. And I said, you know, look, it's... Pardon the... I get my mic working there. I asked her, you know, look, ma'am, it's just one question. She's like, no, I don't have time now. I said, it's one question. And in the time she took telling me that she didn't have time to answer one question, she could have answered the one question. So that kind of stuff just infuriates me. But what infuriated me most of all about the experience, which was not terrible, and especially as the weather got better, it was a very cool May. So once the rain let up, it was actually quite pleasant to be out and about on a bicycle, going to people's lawns and nice neighborhoods and blah, 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 was that the government, being the government, told all of us at the very beginning of training, look, there's basically 6 to 8 weeks of work. You'll all have, once you finish a certain area to canvas, you send that in, and we'll give you another area to go around and do the same thing over again. It might be a little more than 8 weeks, you know, but you should get a good 8 weeks' work out of it. Well, let me tell you something. We all did the 40-hour week of training with a little bit of overtime, which was nice, and then the next week it was raining, so I think I did about 20 hours, rather than they were hoping you would do closer to 40. And then the week after that, I did maybe, about 15 to 20 hours again, just because I was real busy, but I was getting stuff done, and I was already getting towards the end of the areas that I was going to canvas, so I was finishing them up and waiting for my next assignment to come in. Well, that was it. Everybody, not just me, everybody, by the third week was waiting for their next assignments, and they never came. And finally, 2 weeks later, really embarrassed and sheepish about it, the trainers who had, you know, those young guys who had taught us, said, no, that's it. They overhired people, and they got all the work done in about 3.5 weeks, and, well, sorry. Now, you know, I wasn't thrilled about the job, but I was doing it, and I was happy to have the extra money coming in. And a little bit angry, a lot angry, that here was a promise, and I'm sure people who took this job may have set aside 6 to 8 weeks of time of things, other things that they could have been doing, maybe vacations to go on, or other work they could have done, or other jobs that they could have taken, but they figured they wouldn't be able to start until July. And here they were being told, oh no, we only have about 3 weeks of work for you, 80 hours, let's say, instead of the 200 that you were essentially kind of promised going in. So that kind of sucks, and I'm pretty angry at Uncle Sam for doing that. Pretty typical. I guess they were so afraid that they wouldn't get all the canvassing done that they overbooked. And of course, there were so many people this year who are out of work or underpaid or underworked in the recession that, there's so many people clamoring for jobs that they had a glut. They hired everybody and then didn't have enough work for everybody. The hilarious thing is, even though this was essentially a short-term, kind of a full-time job if you did 40 hours a week, but really a part-time thing, and even though they only had 3 weeks of this, I actually got an unemployment form in the mail just 2 days ago. Here it was, this, the complete joke of it was that the government could have hired me, given me work for 8 straight weeks, and made me work for it, and now it looks like I might actually get money. I don't think so, but it'd be really hilarious if the government is now going to pay me for the time they ended up not working because they didn't have enough work for me. Actually, I wouldn't be mad anymore, I'll tell you that. That would make me pretty darn happy. So, I don't know. I hope the government comes to its senses. And will I do it next year if I'm around? I don't know. It wasn't a bad gig, but I certainly won't count on 8 weeks out of it. And will I fill out the census to the best of my ability? Oh, sure. I just hope that the guy who comes to my door to take my information doesn't notice the 15 Mexicans running out my basement window. Yeah, just one of those things. We'll be right back with more of Dave's Gone By.
Shalom, damn it! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and I personally invite you to watch my TV show, Shalom, Damn It! Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour on Cablevision twice a week. If you've never seen a Jew before, this is your chance!
Hi, this is Jeff Goodman, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By.
Dave's Gone By.
There goes the neighborhood indeed on this rather special Sunday night, June 14th. Thanks for being part of this special internet-only episode of Dave's Gone By. I have a feeling we're going to do a lot more of these because it's really fun and kind of simple. I'm going to have to work out how to get Jeff, our wonderful Jeff Goodman, to be a part of this. He's usually our guest co-host here. When he gets back from Thailand, we will include him in, and also to start getting some interviews, too. But this worked out, I think, pretty well. I hope you had fun, and I hope you'll let me know whether you did by contacting me at davesgoneby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, davesgoneby@aol.com. And for more information about the history of this program and the future of this program, please go to davesgoneby.org. We've got some new pictures up there, which is kind of nice. We've also got every episode that we have ever done of this program, barring two that were lost forever owing to station difficulties and broken equipment and things like that. But of all the 313 episodes we've done until now, only two of them aren't online. So check them out. It's absolutely free. You can hear them anytime. You can go back and forth. You can either download them to your iPod or stream them right on your computer without having to download anything. Just go to the archive section of davesgoneby.org. I want to remind everybody about a couple of things. First of all, Stage Buddy Showbiz Talk, Tuesday nights at 7 at the Players Theater, 115 McDougal Street. I'm the host of the show, and I talk to all these people in the entertainment industry, reminding you that on June 14th, our guests will include casting director Duncan Stewart, producer Seth Greenleaf, Broadway actress Cheryl Freeman, and Channel 13 voiceover guy Tom Stewart. It's at the Players Theater, 115 McDougal Street. And we hope we'll have a pretty good crowd this week. It'd be kind of nice. And by the way, it's only... Excuse me, I should mention this. It's only $5 to get in. And that $5 gets you in for the whole night. Because after my show, they also have a variety, kind of an open mic show right at the theater. And you can stay right in on the same ticket. So check it out. 7 o'clock this Tuesday night at the Players Theater on McDougal Street. Also, you can still check out episodes of Shalom, Damn It, featuring Rabbi Saul Solomon. It's his Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour. You can see all the episodes on YouTube.com or watch them on Cablevision of Long Island on Channel 115, Fridays at 3 and Fridays at 3:30 in the afternoon. Really cool time, you know, just a couple of hours before Shabbos. Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, Shalom, Damn It, on YouTube and Long Island Cablevision. The show itself isn't in HD, but it shouldn't be affected by HD, so go watch it in even more primal colors, if that makes any sense at all. I want to remind you, what else? Hey, yeah, our great sponsors, Hewlett-Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, 10% off all jobs, big or small, at Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. They're right next to what used to be the Lowman's Shoe Store. Now they're next to the new location of Max and Gino's, right across the street from the old Lowman's and the Burger King. Can't miss it, and you shouldn't miss it, because Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off any job of printing, binding, copying, family-owned since the 1970s, Minuteman. 569-5577. That's area code 516-569-5577. They're open Mondays through Fridays. In the winter, they actually open on Saturdays, too. But definitely check them out. And also, please check out Fancy Schmancy Balloons for your party or event. 516-797-3229. 797-3229 for balloons and centerpieces to make your party special. Shouldn't your event be fancy schmancy? Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. Everything you need to know about every show on, off, and off-off Broadway, as well as cabaret, opera, and dance, are in the pages of Performing Arts Insider. It's not an online publication. It is an old-fashioned hard copy journal that comes to your mailbox and tells you in a very quick and easy-to-use way everything that's going on the stages of New York, and also how to contact all the important people who are making the shows happen. Go to PerformingArtsInsider.com for more information, and remember, if you're a Dave's Gone By listener, you can get the full year subscription, that's 12 issues, of Performing Arts Insider, the monthly edition, for only $120, which is, I think, about $60 or $70 off the regular price. So, yes, I know it's an expensive little journal, but people pay a lot for it, and it's worth it. Performing Arts Insider. Find out more at davesgoneby.org if you're interested in that discount. Also, please check out totaltheater.com for 2,000 theater reviews and 300 or so feature stories about theater. totaltheater.com. Well, let's see. Say a very, very happy Mazel Tov to Robert and Louise Ann on their wedding last week. We wish them Mazel. Oh, I don't even have time to really talk about their wedding, which was the most mixed ceremony I have ever seen. Maybe I'll talk about that next week. But, he's Jewish, she's Catholic. They held it in a church, and they somehow managed to mix elements of both. Everything from stepping on the glass to, I swear to God, walking down the... not the runway, but the walkway of the church up to, you know, the altar, in, you know, past these mosaics of the Stations of the Cross and the giant cross on the altar and a Jesus hanging there with sunrise, sunset playing. It was one of the weirdest moments I've ever seen, but quite nice, you know, quite lovely, you know, that they could mish the two together. So anyway, congratulations to Robert and Louise Ann, and also happy, happy, happy birthday to the woman I love more than anything else in the world, my adorable and my great wife, Joyce. She turns a big, big number on Tuesday. So, lover, 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 happy birthday to you, my honey. Thank yous also to my mom and dad for being there for me, as always, and to Mama Weil and Papa Weil as well. And, well, it's time to leave the neighborhood, but we'll be back next Sunday, hopefully, Father's Day, and the first day of summer, June 21st, for the 315th episode of Dave's Gone By. Might just be on the internet, might be back on the radio. We'll let you know, depending on how that signal's working. Either way, until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you a good night, happy Flag Day, and feel free to flagellate yourselves, and gone by.
Stand alone with somebody else, or stand with all of us together. If you can believe something bigger than yourself, you can follow the flag forever. Rise above it all. We will fight.